Hi, everybody, and welcome to an exciting Thanksgiving edition of Objection. Like we tend to do with these holidays, we go off on our digression. So, yes, we are in the guts of our top 20 action movies that would be despised by Prius enthusiasts, but we are going to take another break, like we did in our Halloween countdown, with a very special Thanksgiving countdown. And, of course, with me as always is fellow contrarian a-hole, which obviously Objection is the worldwide leader in contrarian a-holery, Dan Mancini. Dan, how goes it?
It goes well.
And now
it goes very well.
Now, what are your Thanksgiving plans? Are the Bears playing on Thanksgiving or no?
I'm trying to think. I don't think so. They just played last Thursday. So maybe they are set up. I don't know. That would be nice.
Yeah, I got the talk about digressions here. My heart's still settling down from another redonkulous Colts-Patriots game. Peyton Manning has been slumping the last couple of games, and then he just tosses 400 yards, you know? It's just crazy heart arrhythmia around here in New England, but I could rest a little easy, you know, into Thanksgiving holiday. So that's nice. I'm glad that's behind us.
Yes, those
are always epic showdowns. So what are your...
I always like it when Peyton Manning loses a game.
Now, yeah, that's true. Is that like a personal thing, or is that dictated by geography? You know, like, do Bears fans... I mean, are Bears fans...
Thing.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I was very turned off on him early in his career just because of his sense of entitlement at a time when he'd done absolutely nothing. And it used to drive me crazy that he would do things like, if they were trailing, drive down the field a little ways and throw, you know, like with seconds left in the game, throw like three Hail Marys that didn't connect and then blame it on the kicker when he missed like a 60-yard field goal. It's like, well, you could have got the guy, you know, you could have moved downfield 20 yards instead of trying to throw touchdown bombs. So I never have liked the guy.
So that's been something that's kind of been ingrained from the beginning.
Yeah.
Which is the natural segue for our countdown, because we're talking about stuff being ingrained. And we're going to give you a little hint what this countdown is. Thanksgiving is a first hint. Second hint is a very special commercial that kind of ingrained something in all of us. Dan, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, the old 70s... I guess it was a public service announcement.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if
so
it was
so young that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I have watched it recently on YouTube though, and it's still enjoyable. And that is the anti-pollution PSA, I guess, featuring a Native American rowing down a river in his canoe or whatever it's called, and then weeping at the sight of garbage.
I mean, just has been a. And it's been like a cultural touchstone from that point, you know. I mean, it's actually become kind of parodied after a while, but, you know, the message was loud and clear, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely imprinted by that commercial as a child, as a 5 and 6 year old child, watching cartoons and then seeing that.
Yourself probably surrounded by garbage, like unwrapped candy bar wrappers or empty boxes of Trix and, you know, disposed treat, you know, toys from the cereal boxes. So that probably got you where it counted, I'm thinking.
Right. I mean, the PSA was very clear that I was part of the problem.
Yes. And in fact, you are. Because, again, using a very generous grant from the OWMC, which again is the Old White Man Cabal.
And sponsorship by Chef Boyardee Testosterone.
Yes, Chef Boyardee Testosterone. We've brought to you another miniature countdown, which is operating kind of within the framework of our Prius Enthusiast countdown. And in honor of Thanksgiving, we are going to count down the top 5 white guilt movies. So, and what do we mean by white guilt movies? Now, you know, it's not trying to be racist at all. It's just, it's like, it's kind of like what Dan was talking about, how we were kind of imprinted, you are part of the problem. You know, you imperialist Yankee dog are part of the problem.
So these are 5 movies that apologize
for
white people being really beyond part of the problem, the problem.
The problem, almost apoplectic in their apologetics, I would say.
Yes.
Go so over the top. So that is how we thought we'd, in true a-hole fashion. That's how we'd start Thanksgiving. In fact, there probably could have been an argument made we should have done this on Columbus Day, but that's what next year is for, I guess. You know, as we were trying to tick off movies here, we realized a lot of obvious ones we hadn't seen. I mean, there's probably some obvious ones we're going to miss, like Steven Seagal's Fire Down Below, which he plays an avenging EPA agent, which we need to get around to. So, you know, we'll try to sock away some of those and maybe hit up Columbus Day next year. But this is, yeah, in honor of Thanksgiving, which is a very special day in the white guilt calendar year, our top five favorite movies tackling such subjects. So let's just get – I guess we'll just get right into it. And you want to – see, we'll start off with number five. And these aren't necessarily movies we dislike either, you know?
No,
you know, they're movies here. There are going to be movies in this content that we'll like, and we'll objectively say they're good, entertaining movies. Just thematically, they make you want to, you know, overdose on prescription medication because you feel so bad about yourself.
Yes.
So number five is another movie that I really liked, but definitely doesn't hesitate to get its shots in, and that is Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, the Kevin Costner opus.
Indeed.
This is one of those, it's more subtle, you know? I mean, obviously Robin Hood's the hero, and, you know, Little John and all those guys are all heroes, you know, good for them. But
Robin Hood would not be a hero if he hadn't been thrown in jail with a Muslim.
Yes, that's right. In the Crusades.
That's why he's capable of being a hero.
In fact, if you remember, you know, right at the end, this is actually kind of laughable in its ridiculousness. And, you know, right at the end when they're having the big fight and, like, all the townspeople are getting out of the castle, heading out, fleeing, right? You know, Morgan Freeman's character, I got to look it up. It's like Aziz or something. I'll take a look at that. But he stands up and he, like, gives them a pep talk, you know? And it's enough to turn them all around and say, yes, let's go fight. So they were going to run away and hide and let their freedoms go away, if not for this nice little pep talk, you know, from the nice guy from the Crusades.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, the Europeans in the movie, for the most part, are filthy and stupid.
Yes, in that order. Like Friar Tuck is a complete moron. You know, when
yes.
You know, when he sees, like, gunpowder and explosives put together, he automatically assumes it's some kind of magic, you know?
Yes.
Right. And, it's just those little shots throughout, you know? I think Robin Hood says something. He's, you know, talking to the merry men, you know, or whatever, and kind of get them amped out, and he tells them, hey, the Crusades taught me this, you know? And it was something like, you know, a man will fight against the aggressors of his land, so-and-so, you know? So, Azim, that's a guy's name, not Aziz, Azim. So, yeah, so Robin Hood, yeah, the dirty, moronic, hillbilly Europeans would have nothing if it weren't for the wise counsel of the man from the Crusades.
Yes, yeah, that's what the Crusades brought.
That's true.
The enlightenment of our own stupidity.
Yes. That, like, makeshift mortars and IEDs, you know, that they throw their flaming arrows in and, you know, blow up half the castle. And you would think a quarter of the townspeople, but, you know, who knows. All right. So Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves. Number four is technically our only animated film, you know, but maybe not if you think about it. And that is Disney's animated Tarzan, which is a movie I actually enjoy quite a bit, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, yeah. Phil Collins songs notwithstanding.
That's right. That's right. I believe it was really like almost Disney's like final stand in 2D hand-drawn art, I thought, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it was really kind of the end of an era with that.
And really beautiful film.
It was. Oh, absolutely. Fast-moving, very entertaining. Pretty respectable bad guy final death scene, especially for a Disney movie. He gets hanged by a vine. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, unfortunately, Tarzan has been...
Right, a grenade attached to him.
That's true. Rambo 3, yes. Unfortunately, Tarzan kind of, you know, he's the reactive action hero there, but I guess you can't have him in a Disney movie, like, you know, stringing up a bad guy and just kicking a stool out from under his feet. So we'll let that one slide. But anyway, cool movie. However, pretty obvious, you know, the bad guys are all these, again, these European encroachers.
Yes.
you know, and the and they're just there to despoil the land, you know, capture all of the wonderful animals that live, you know, within the circle of life and in this beautiful symbiotic relationship, and just throw them in cages and put them on their boats and take them where, I guess, to zoos, I suppose, right?
Yeah. Unlike the old live action Tarzan movies, the only human beings in the animated one are the Europeans, and they're just trigger happy,
yes,
insane,
conscience free, have no, yeah,
and despoilers. That's it, you know. other than Jane,
that's
her,
true.
Her doddering father's, you know.
Yes.
Kind of comes around.
Who also goes native too. You remember, right. Tarzan kind of he puts on the civilized clothes, you know, until the guilt, he just cannot handle the guilt anymore. And there's like an actual, you know, there's like an extended sequence of him systematically ripping off his clothes, so he's down to his loincloth, you know. And then right. he just marshals the animals together, and they fight back against, you know, against the interlopers.
Right, against the dude with the square jaw,
yes, and elephant slicked jaw. Back hair, well dressed, you know.
Right,
probably did well
cravat.
For
himself.
So good movie, like some great action scenes, really fun to watch. But oh yeah, oh also I think Rosie O'Donnell guest role in this, so that probably doesn't, you know, that probably helps.
Yeah, guilt. Yeah, a gorilla with a heavy Brooklyn accent.
Yes.
Is a little distracting.
A little bit anachronistic. Doesn't quite jive. So, but anyway, movie we both liked. But the message is pretty clear. You are a douchebag if you go to zoos, my friend. You know that.
Yeah.
You know that. Now I'll let you run point on this one, number three, Dan, because to my shame, it's one of those movies that I probably should have seen, but I have not. Right up there, along with like The Shawshank Redemption. You know, movies I am just. You know, just sad to confess I haven't seen, but this is Dances with Wolves.
Yes, and you know,
Academy Award.
See it, but yeah, you may be lucky that you haven't. It. Let me put it this way: it's no Waterworld.
Oh, well, what movie is?
No, yeah, Waterworld. That's it. yeah, I mean, this is a prime real estate in this countdown, and. Listeners may be shocked that it's only number three, but I think they'll see why as we move on. But yeah, definitely a movie where it's well beyond Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves in terms of the filthiness and stupidity of all of the white people, nearly all of the white people in the movie. I mean, you have dudes in this movie who can't even eat without getting food like all over their faces and shirts, and I mean it's pathetic.
You know, this again, we're gonna typical Inception like third digression, but I do want to say you just reminded me, because part of these lists and part of our previous enthusiast list, whatever, is kind of objecting to the just kind of the character of the idiot husband or father or
yes.
strong. You know, hero. And I don't know if you've seen the commercial. I saw it on the football game here. Like this idiot dad has no idea how to use his like OnStar navigation system in the car, and like it's his 8-year-old who tells him, you know, how to use it. And it is like the guy is functionally retarded. You know, I mean,
because OnStar isn't it one button?
It's like it's like operating, you know, a Nintendo GameCube controller. But this guy is such a mouth breather. He has no idea what he's doing. And it takes his like 8-year-old son to, you know, to instruct him. Typical,
right? Yeah, and in Dances with Wolves too. There's a guy who there's a Union officer at a fort who's so around the bend from being assigned to this fort that's out in the middle of nowhere for so long that he actually pees his own pants.
Oh, fantastic!
While he's talking to Kevin Costner. So yeah, that's pretty much the level of the white people in the movie, and then all of the Native Americans are the definition of the noble savage,
which in itself is like awesome. I mean it does grand disservice to, you know, whoever is being tagged as the noble savage, you know, and that's demeaning in of itself, you know.
Yeah,
I've always found that ironic. that's like, you know, actually essentially dehumanizing, you know, an entire race of people when you just kind of paint them as these stereotypical one-dimensional constructs.
Right, right. I mean, the cool thing about the movie is they do speak in the actual language of the indigenous peoples of this country.
Yes.
Which is cool to hear. And there are some good actors in that movie. But yeah, it's so black and white and so one-sided.
And Kevin Costner's character does go native, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And eventually, it's been a while since I've seen it, but yeah, I think it does kind of culminate in him fighting against Union soldiers.
Well, Union soldiers, yeah. Too, no less. Oof.
Right.
There you go.
Right.
Cheap shot right there. nice. Well, I mean, that formula would obviously go on to be emulated, not the least of which by our number two movie. And you may have thought it'd be number one, especially with news of its gigantic release and the fact that it is a favorite whipping boy of this podcast.
But number one, it is not.
Number one, it is not. We're pretty pleased as punch with our number one choice, but we won't give number two short shrift. And that is, of course, Avatar. And this is like our 20th podcast. We're going to take a dump on Avatar, but you know what? You know, it feels good. It feels good doing it, especially as its super extended edition is being released right around Thanksgiving. Just in case you sit down to enjoy some turkey, you know, and Stories of Pilgrims or not, here you can go watch U.S. Marines slaughter blue space cat children.
Yes. And I keep swearing that I'm going to stop bagging on this movie. That enough is enough, and I'm just going to walk away, and I'm done. But, you know. I can't help it.
Yeah, it's pathological.
If he's going to keep releasing it.
That's true.
There's nothing I can do about it.
I mean, we had a theatrical re-release. Now we've got this gigantic Blu-ray double dip, you know, coming, you know, which obviously coming on the heels of the emaciated original version. I don't know. Is this one 3D enabled?
I don't think so.
Okay. Then you know that something else is coming down the way. So.
Right. Right.
Yeah, so obviously
How come Cameron isn't called a whore like George Lucas always is? George Lucas released Star Wars once on DVD.
Yeah,
and then
true.
Repackaged a couple times, and everybody acts like, you know, he's pimping out his product in every possible way that he can.
Or the Indiana Jones
stuff. James Cameron releasing two different DVDs within, like, what, 3 or 4 months?
That's true. You know, Indiana Jones trilogy is another thing that hasn't been double-dipped. You know, in DVD realm. So, yeah, so he gets a pass. But, you know, Avatar, just, what more do you have to say? I mean, in fact, speaking of Tarzan, I remember when I was watching Avatar, the scene with the stampeding rhino monsters things as they came to destroy the U.S. Marines. And they are U.S. Marines, of course. That scene, like, really reminded me of something from Tarzan. Where the zoo interlopers, same thing. Like, I think actual rhinos broke through and chased them down. And it was very similar to that. So, I mean, obviously perfect, noble, indigenous natives being encroached upon for so-and-so. Our hero goes rogue, totally drops a deuce on all of humanity. You know,
yes.
A steaming deuce.
We deserve it, apparently.
That's right. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, really, I think we've well documented this by now, so we won't dwell on it. But is there anything else you want to add for this special countdown edition of Avatar bashing?
Well, you know, just again that the way that these mercenaries are presented, it's like imagine Colonel Kurtz from Apocalypse Now. That's essentially what the Stephen Lang character is, but yet with an entire corporation and like thousands upon thousands of retired Marines.
That's right. Only one of which.
Who don't go, wow, man, this guy is insane.
There's one person who has a crisis. One person, Michelle Rodriguez, one person has a crisis of conscience.
Right. Yeah. And then she's stupid enough to paint her gunship blue.
She's not like
everybody
a great
knows guy. That she's having a crisis of conscience.
So, yeah. So, obviously, we could go on and on, but I'd say that's enough, right? That's enough. You know, any publicity is good publicity, so Avatar doesn't need any from us. So we'll just move right along to our number one, which we were actually, we were thinking, you know, man, Avatar probably should be number one, you know. But as we were ready to go on with that, one popped into our head, and it's something I saw recently, and it still is just a fantastic piece of awful movie making. Craps all over a cultural icon, destroys a franchise that was halfway decent. Just is such an obvious, clunky, ham-fisted message movie that it could not have not been our number one. And that is Superman IV, The Quest for Peace.
Yes.
Which is actually, again, a movie that I enjoy, but basically because it's so horrifying. And then the guilt.
It's
so much guilt.
Train wreck.
So much guilt. Because this is the film that Christopher Reeve agreed to do, right? As long as he can get some of his beliefs intertwined into the story.
Yeah, it's a film essentially that demonstrates without a doubt that Christopher Reeve was insane. Because, this was like a passionate statement film.
Yes, not to speak ill of the dead.
It's craziness.
It's unfortunate that it got clouded. Like, didn't he know how great number one was? And number two, didn't he realize how great those were?
Apparently not.
Yeah, so.
But yeah, it's a big mountain of crazy.
It is pretty crazy. I mean,
they don't even notice that Superman is essentially fascist in the movie.
Oh, absolutely.
He goes to the UN and is like, all right, here's the deal. I'm taking all of your weapons and I'm going to throw them into the sun.
And they applaud him for it. Yeah, they all applaud.
They're like, yay, thank you, Hitler Superman. Thank you.
I think the Syrian delegation was especially excited about that. Yeah.
Right.
I love how some stupid little kid is, plus, I mean, there's so much wrong with it. Like, it posits that Superman is just a complete idiot. Because it takes a little kid's letter to first of all say that nuclear weapons have the capacity to destroy the Earth, So he needs that prompting. And then obviously, who are the people behind it? Remember Lex's meeting with like the arms dealers,
Right.
So a bunch of white dudes there, and obviously the Russian. It's really U.S. Russian.
And there's no debate about maybe we should be concerned about the fact that this alien is suddenly intruding upon the
sovereign nations.
Government. Yeah. The sovereignty of nations and government action and stuff and doing so against our will.
I mean,
everybody
even take away
over and it's like, yay. All right, cool.
So even take away the nukes, What if he all of a sudden said, Happy Meals are too high in calories. I will take these away from you as well.
Right.
Isn't that?
No more toys and Happy Meals. I'm going to come and punch a hole through your face.
All your cigarettes are gone. All your alcohol gone. I will be personally checking to make sure you're wearing your seatbelt, or you'll be thrown into the sun. I mean, really, that's what you're looking at, And then, of course, Lex creates, as Superman is questing for this peace to assuage all that guilt, he creates probably the worst villain in a comic book movie ever made. That's got to be up there.
I'm trying to think of who would be worse, and I can't come up.
I mean, there's
with
been
anything.
Some bad ones, but
maybe Faye Dunaway in Supergirl. Maybe, but I don't. It's probably even worse than her, though.
I mean, the computer possessed girl from Superman 3, but not really. Maybe not.
Yeah.
She actually like unsettled me when I was a child. So that's I'm gonna give it to Nuclear Man, played by Mark Pillow, which is an awesome name, by the way, Mark Pillow.
Yeah. I'm just amazed that it's not Shadow Stevens because it looks like Shadow Stevens. I would have if you had made me guess because I haven't seen the movies in that long. In such a long time, I would have been like, I don't know, Shadow Stevens, maybe. Didn't he have like a nice mullet, a nice blonde curly mullet?
I mean, talk about like the guy ripped right from, one of those weightlifting cages on the beach that you see sometimes in 80s movies. Remember, we're just walking on Venice Beach or whatever. There's like these roid raging guys lifting weights while people watch. This guy looked like he was plucked right from there or from a Gold's Gym or something, and just put spandex and it, just awful. His voice is done by Gene Hackman too, which is just ridiculous as well. So
yeah, I forgot about that. Oh man, yeah, it's what a weird movie because really, I mean it's so upside down and so completely insane.
They're naive,
and you have the fascist Superman and stuff. That Lex Luthor is actually kind of the hero of the movie.
If you think about it, right.
It's like, what kind of weirdness is that? That Lex Luthor ends up being the guy who's sort of battling
for freedom,
crazy fascism. Yeah. Yeah. Fighting for the freedom of mankind.
So maybe Nuclear Man is actually a freedom fighter? Is that possible? Have we got this guy all wrong? You know, has he been
I think we do.
Has he been shafted so long? Nuclear Man, is he the man of the people? Do we need to carve his face on Mount Rushmore? I don't know. All I know is I loved his origin. You know, Gene Hackman and his idiot nephew, played by John Cryer. You know, they all of a sudden become these, incredible, nuclear physicists. You know, they're putting together this little box that they're going to put in a nuclear warhead. It's got like a little piece of fabric and some glob of like Nickelodeon gack, and that is enough. Uh-huh. That's enough to cough up Mark Pillow's nuclear man. Oh, fantastic. I mean, eventually Superman does kind of say, I was wrong for me to commandeer all your stuff. Even though he's doing it forcefully, you're seeing people like they're doing test launches and he's just like grabbing them out of thin air and putting them in a giant net,
That's right.
So he eventually does.
It's not like he completely forgets everything that Marlon Brando told him in the first film.
That's right. And there's some taxpayer money right down the toilet, by the way. Those nuclear warheads come cheap. So, but then he does.
It's going to take him a long time to pay that back on a reporter's salary.
That's right. he finally has a little speech where he says, it was wrong for me to interfere or something like that. But then he just pleads. Remember, he just pleads with everybody to avoid the fate of Krypton, right? Or you're a species that shows much promise, something super condescending, just like
right.
The exact thing that would really turn a populace against the superhero, just so condescending to everybody. You'll get it eventually, you'll eventually learn to live together.
Yeah, he gives this little speech, and then what you don't see is that somewhere in Gotham City, Batman is watching it on TV and deciding, I've got to score myself a piece of kryptonite in case this douchebag gets out of hand again.
I heard there was probably a deleted scene that he flies over and does some work on the Camp David Accords as well. That's
right.
I'm sure that's probably in there as well. So, oh, man.
He probably pleaded with Yasser Arafat at the time.
That's right.
Please, can't you see the futility of your violence?
This just springs to me, if you're talking about awful comic book movies compared to very good comic book movies, like consider, what Superman does to like what Dr. Manhattan does in The Watchmen,
Right.
Just right. I mean, he doesn't level the playing field. He just levels everything,
Right. Exactly.
It's unfortunate that, that really did a lot of irreparable harm to the Superman franchise,
Superman. Yeah, it's never really recovered.
Never really recovered
from 3 and 4.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Watchmen, you got Zack Snyder now at the helm with Christopher Nolan overseeing, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Hopefully they can revive it.
Yeah, but
Superman Returns certainly did not.
Yeah. I love even the cover art of Superman 4, where he's flying and he's got the warhead, he's barehanded the warhead behind him,
Yeah. Yeah, there's some weird, it's probably not quite as weird as him carrying Richard Pryor.
That's weird, right? Or Richard Pryor really falling off a skyscraper on skis and surviving,
Yeah.
I mean, actually, Superman 4 is probably not as campy as Superman 3 if you think about it,
No, it takes itself
it's
very
so,
seriously.
It's deadly serious.
Yeah.
Which
makes it worse,
And of course,
you can't get any worse than Superman 3. It's so corny and so silly, and then they actually make one worse by making it less silly.
Making it a message movie, and one of my favorite dumbass Superman moves in that fourth movie was when he moves the moon, to cause the eclipse, and that saps Nuclear Man of his power. Does he know how, tides work? I mean, you're telling me that's not going to screw things up at all?
Yeah, some whales had to die from that.
Pushes the moon out of orbit, probably, you know, and probably wipes out about 2 third-world countries because of, like, tsunamis. Thanks a lot, Superman.
Right.
And again, that's – I just think about Superman 4. Like, that's where he's got these moves where he can – he's got these impressive new powers where he rebuilds the Great Wall of China with blue laser beams, you know?
Oh, man, I forgot about
that. His blue vision rebuilds. So he's got rebuilding vision now. So,
like, why didn't he use that in Superman 2? They're tearing up Metropolis.
Remember, Superman 2 had some crazy stuff, too, you know?
Just giant
plastic shields and his teleportation. But this one, I really enjoyed the...
Yeah, the multiple Supermans.
Yep, or when he eye-zapped the top of the mountain off to plug the volcano, you know?
Yeah.
Is that going to work? That doesn't seem safe. I mean, maybe they were like, what about all the wildlife on top of that mountain, you know? It's just... Unbelievable.
Yeah, so, he doesn't really seem to be that much into... He doesn't respect the laws of physics.
He doesn't. I mean, that whole movie didn't. Because he had Nuclear Man carrying Muriel Hemingway into outer space.
That's right.
So, oh, boy. Really is... Because they play it so serious, that's where, ironically, its joy comes from. And I do enjoy watching that movie. And I can't imagine what Gene Hackman was thinking, but maybe he was just down with the anti-nuclear proliferation, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he got out for 3.
Right.
And then he came back for that.
That's right. And so, that's crazy. Well played, Mr. Reeve. You got him on board. So, all right. Well, that is it. I think that is the end of our little impromptu countdown on our favorite white guilt movies. And again, this is with, we are country and a-holes, but we can laugh at ourselves. So this is all in good fun.
Yes.
So, again, if you haven't watched Superman 4 lately, you really owe it to yourself. You know, skip the football on Thursday, fire that bad boy in, and just feel the guilt overcome the tryptophan, you know, and you'll feel so much better.
Understand that you are so craven that you need a superhero
That's right.
To fascistically take control of your life.
Yes.
And save you. Against your will.
Against your will, yes. Absolutely. So thank you, Superman, for showing us the way. Yes.
Right. Thank you for being a total jerk and treating us like infants. All because a little kid wrote you a letter. Thank you very much.
An annoyingly precocious little kid, too. That's even worse, I think. So.
I mean, what if world leaders behave like this? What if world wars started and stuff?
That's right.
Because little kids wrote letters to
a letter from a fifth grader that said we should just go in there and take over the Golan Heights. You know,
right.
Just go.
We can't allow Iran to become nuclear. We need to bomb that place. You know, and then Obama's like, "Fire up the bombers."
That's right. That's right. I got this letter from this fifth grader. Yeah,
and then the entire world burns.
Wow, wow, wow. Oh, man. All right. Well, before the white guilt completely overtakes us, I suppose we should wrap this up. So, we'll return soon with the continuation of our countdown. We are in the home stretch, obviously, in our action movies as detested by priest enthusiasts, so you won't want to miss that. Thank you for bearing with us on this Thanksgiving special.
Watch the tryptophan.
Watch the tryptophan. Yep. Relax. Enjoy the, making those little mashed potato volcanoes with the gravy. You know, speaking of volcanoes, putting the little gravy, it's my favorite part of Thanksgiving. So, not the family, not the friends.
Eat mashed potatoes, eat sweet potatoes, and while you're doing it, think about the millions of dead.
Yes, the bones
upon whose bodies you're feasting.
That's true. Upon the turkey feasted on that the composed flesh of the enemies that we crushed underfoot.
Right.
If only Superman here were to save us. So with that, Dan, what's left there to say?
Thanks, 10 points easy.